I'm Kathleen Dunn. We, of course, just finished hearing President Barack Obama's final press conference. It is truly remarkable how quickly 8 years fly by. This hour, we are, for the remainder of the hour, going to reflect on his presidency and the legacy that he leaves us. Throughout his tenure, he has cited the writings of Pulitzer Prize-winning author Marilynne Robinson as a source of inspiration. He said that he has found her fictional character John Ames, an Iowa pastor, in her book Gilead, served as a kind of moral compass for him. The two of them had a lengthy conversation that was published in the New York Review of Books in September, and we had a chance to speak with Marilynne Robinson about their conversation. And we're delighted to tell you that she'll be joining us again to talk about his final day and a half in office and his presidency. She will be with us momentarily. We're going to start first with the Atlantic's Van Newkirk to talk about this press conference and also about Obama's legacy, and to welcome your phone calls as well. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Van Newkirk, thank you very much for joining us. Press conference went long, but we appreciate your thoughts for a few moments. Hi, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. We're going to talk about Marilynne Robinson's conversation with him and their talk about values and democracy and fear and books. It's interesting to me as I listen to him, and we've spent some time listening to his earlier speeches today, that he ended that press conference with his same kind of moral compass and inspirational words that really have guided us through incredible moments the last 8 years. He is a master of important oratory, don't you think?
I think so. And I think what he stressed at the end of that press conference was that this is who President Obama is. He's essentially an optimist. I don't think he becomes president without that optimism. And it shows in all his oratory and all of his rhetoric is that he believes in the central promise of America and has worked towards it for 8 years.
Mm-hmm. There's an interesting piece I'm sure you saw in the New York Times where he was interviewed, and it ran on Monday on Dr. King's birthday, the day after his real birthday, the day we celebrate, talking about writing books that have been important to him. The author of the piece said that there is a clear line connecting Lincoln and King and Obama. Is that too lofty, or is there something to that?
Well, I'm sure Obama himself would embrace that comparison.
I think it is so.
I think there is at least he's patterned his rhetoric, I think, very specifically after Lincoln's especially. And Lincoln was also a person who was very much a pragmatist, who did also believe in the central promises of America. And I think Obama has embraced his sort of American incrementalism.
Mm-hmm. When you think about what he would believe to be his proudest accomplishment, certainly one of them was the Affordable Care Act. There are people who are thinking that we're going to see just a dramatic change in policy and undoing of some of Obama's signature pieces of legislation. So there are many people worried about that. Do you think that will happen, or do you think those heart-to-heart talks and lengthy conversations he said he had with Donald Trump will mean that we may see a presidency that might surprise us in some ways, and those who didn't vote for Donald Trump surprise us in a good way?
Well, I think Obama's the optimist, but as a journalist, I have to look and take people for what they say and what they do. We've got, during confirmation hearings today, Representative Tom Price is saying he's going to repeal and replace Obamacare, and he'll be the official with some of the most sway over that. I don't think Republicans have deviated from any promise to do so, really. And the policies we have in place that we've seen that have been written intend to do that. And same thing with voting rights and other things. I think there's not much reason for a person with an analytic frame to really think his message got through to Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Do you imagine that there will be significant demonstrations during the early part of the Trump presidency?
Oh, I know there will be. There already are. Being in downtown D.C., I think if you go a couple blocks away from our offices here, there are already tons and tons of anti-Trump signs. There's going to be some counter-protests on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, a couple of alternative events. And I'll be keeping tabs on those throughout the week.
Mm-hmm. And when you look at the last 8 years, obviously he's going to take time to think about what he's been through, he said, and do some writing on this, which will be interesting. What are the moments, do you think? I think, unfortunately, of some of the tragic moments and how he had to become consoler-in-chief after Charleston and after Newtown, where he cried and most of the nation cried with him. He went through some rough, rough times. What will you think of when you say, now this was an accomplishment?
Well, for one, the election in 2008,
It's true.
You know, I was in college. And thinking about what all my friends and where we've grown up, the careers we've chosen, most of my friends are African American, all of what we've done, our sense of confidence and self, even those of us who no longer agree with him at all, a lot of it came from that election and what it gave not just young African American folks, young people of color, young disabled people, LGBTQ people. I think what his election has done for the American sense of self in classes that are protected, that have traditionally been discriminated against, you really can't take that piece of it away.
And when you say the things that you didn't agree with him on, what might those be?
Well, as a journalist, he's left behind a pretty mixed record on journalistic sourcing, on leaking. Now, if President Trump comes into office and is as antagonistic towards the press as he was as a candidate, there's almost no federal law regulation stopping him from, say, forcing subpoena journalists to testify against their sources. This is a real legacy of the administration, also domestic surveillance and things like that, that if you are afraid of a President Trump, they could be expanded under that administration.
Mm-hmm. It is something, though, when you think about his place in history, the fact that his picture is, if it's not already there, going to go up in a lot of living rooms all over the country. He will forever be remembered, and it's touching what you said about what he did for your life and what he did just to make this office possible, what happened to LGBTQ community and how they were able to make phenomenal inroads. I mean, we're seeing changes. We might see a backlash against some of those changes right now, but it was a significant moment in American history for him to become president, wasn't it?
It certainly was. I think what we'll see and what we'll garner from this most is that progress is not necessarily linear, but that people who work to, say, get a Barack Obama elected president are the people who bend progress towards some one day, you know, expectation of equality. If you look around now, I can attest President Obama's already on the calendars on the wall in lots of African-American homes. We had the old Kennedy and King calendars, and now they're Kennedy King and Obama. Mm-hmm. Calendars. Now they're Kennedy King and Obama shirts. You look at just, again, the expectation of lots of children who have not known anything other than a black president. When they look at their lives and what they're going to be when they grow up and what they want to do, there's no limitation for them in their mind. And that's a difference from almost every other generation of people of color that have grown up and lived in this country.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk just a little bit about some of the news. He was certainly asked about Chelsea Manning. What did you think of his comments during the press briefing? And he's also taken quite a bit of criticism considering what's going on with WikiLeaks and this whole leaking of documents, Russia hacking the U.S. election, where that information may have come from. Was it WikiLeaks? Was it not? But this has not been a popular decision, this pardon.
Oh, it's not. You saw, I think, Paul Ryan had a statement out saying that it basically sets a precedent that other people who leak will, you know, do it now because there's not a punishment. And I think what Obama said during the press conference was spot on. Chelsea Manning was held as a transgender woman in a male military prison, was held for a year in solitary confinement, just about, which UN special reporters said that was tantamount to torture. Those are not things that I think any leaker of information is going to look at and say, I want that to happen to me. But, you know, on the other side, this is a little bit too little too late for lots of people who would who did want the president to be more transparent, to be more forgiving to whistleblowers, and to, again, make sure that the relationship between journalists and their sources and the transparency of the government aided by whistleblowers is protected by the law.
Mm-hmm. He also had some interesting things to say about when he will feel it necessary to speak out, when there's discrimination, if people are sent back, speaking of Dreamers, to some place because of actions that may be taken by the government, what it will be on the national stage that will make him say, I need to have my voice be heard, and I wonder how he will make his voice be heard.
Well, we got a pretty nice magazine here if he wants to come write for us. But, you know, I think he has already been a master of direct-to-media communication. He just had a slew of articles and papers out in different outlets over the past couple months. He was in Science very recently talking about climate change. I think that's something we should expect him to continue doing. It's something he really enjoys. I actually think Obama the writer is probably the closest mode of President Obama to his own heart and mind. And so that's something we can probably expect to keep happening. Maybe some more stuff in the Harvard Law Review. But, you know, he likes to do it.
And I would imagine there's going to be pressure on his wife, who remains enormously popular in this country and is also one incredibly moving and direct and inspirational speaker, really a smart woman, for her to be running for office. Do you imagine that might happen? And won't the pressure be great on her to do just that, Van?
Well, the three or four best political speeches I saw in 2016 were all from Michelle Obama. Her speech at the DNC is legendary right now.
Yes.
I still remember the seeing people looking for the Michelle signs afterwards, and they were just, you know, overcome. I don't think she enters politics, though. I think, again, I take them at their word, and they have over years said she is not going into politics. I think they've not done much to place her in the political arena outside of those speeches, and I would be very surprised if she did.
Mm-hmm. You will be covering the Donald Trump administration?
Yep, sure will.
And what are your concerns about the relationship, which is quite antagonistic between Donald Trump and a great many members of the press? The decision, I don't know if it's been a decision yet, but maybe moving the press corps out of the White House. Do you imagine there will be, and how will you ask for, a level of transparency from the new administration?
Well, if I'm concerned about transparency and accountability now, I think it's doubly so. Moving forward, you have a president-elect who's only done two press conferences in the span of 6 months. You've got them saying they're going to move the press corps out of the White House. You've got, I think, a very already antagonistic relationship with people being threatened of being kicked out of pressers for asking questions. This is not what you're looking for in terms of moving ahead with informing the public, especially during a time when we've got lots of reports of fake news and people generally not trusting their information sources. And I don't know really what to expect beyond what we've already seen, again, which is a bit of discord and chaos. I think the president-elect likes to use misinformation as a tool and likes to use things like press conferences as a spectacle instead of ways of effectively disseminating information. I think one thing that we can expect from Trump moving ahead is actually utilizing more of Obama's direct media tactics. Trump already, of course, is issuing 15 press releases a day through Twitter. But, you know, more of that, more of speaking directly, more of not going through journalistic channels so we can speak to people. I think we're looking at something similar to Andrew Jackson.
Mm. Well, you're a new voice to us. We do this show called All Things Political every Monday at 1 o'clock, and I want to invite you to be one of our early guests, Van, if you don't mind.
Oh, I'd love to.
Good. All right. You're on. You'll get a call. Thank
you. Awesome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Van Newkirk, the second, a staff writer at The Atlantic, covering politics and policy. We had hoped to have a little more time with him. The press conference went long, but that's okay. It was the final press conference from a consequential president. Marilynne Robinson is joining us now. We're delighted that she could be with us. On September 14, the acclaimed writer, theologian, very deep thinker, she's such a deep thinker, had a conversation with President Barack Obama, and the president asked for a meeting with her, saying, one of the things I don't get a chance to do as often as I'd like is just to have a conversation with somebody who I enjoy, I'm interested in, to hear from them, have a conversation with them about some of the broader cultural forces that shape our democracy and shape our ideas, shape how we feel about citizenship and the direction that this country should be going in. Marilynne was the first in the queue because Barack Obama loves her books. He picked up Gilead in Iowa when he was campaigning, and he mentioned her, and I want to start our conversation with her, with just a portion of President Obama's eulogy for State Senator Clementa Pinckney, who was one of the nine victims in that horrendous shooting at Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston, South Carolina. Here's the president, and he mentions Marilynne Robinson, who joins us in a moment.
As a country, we have been through this too many times.
Whoops, I'm sorry. That was Sandy Hook, and we will hear that in just a moment. But we will wait and play the mention of Marilynne Robinson momentarily. But let's introduce Marilynne. Marilynne Robinson, thank you so much for being with us. What a time we're in, aren't we?
Oh, very strange. Nothing I would have anticipated.
Yeah, it is very strange. Well, you're one of the few people. He has mentioned you so many times, and he asked you to have a long conversation with him about democracy and fear and so many different issues. I'm just interested in what you're thinking. I know you're an avid news consumer as well. As he spends his last day and a half, gave his last press conference, are you filled with sadness about this? Do you share his optimism about the future of our country? Do you share his hope?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that he feels very deeply, just from listening to him like everyone else, is that you create the grounds for optimism, you know? I mean, it seemed to me, listening to this press conference, that he was putting the best possible light on things, not as predictive, but as something that can actually move us past the kinds of alarm that might be excessive, I hope. The kinds of recoil that might be a feature of the experience of many people for whom Trump is not acceptable, you know. One of the things that impresses me so much about President Obama is that he really feels a sort of dynamic in the continuity of American life, and he really feels it as something that is deeply complex and often disappointing and and ultimately a splendid thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He has something like a sort of tragic consciousness, you know, that can absorb amazing things into a sort of an aesthetic conception of what the whole thing is, you
mm-hmm.
know? And it's sort of a moral conception because he earnestly believes that it tends toward goodness, toward humane life for more and more people.
I love the piece in the New York Times on Sunday where the interviewer asked him about what he was reading and the importance of writing and the importance of certain books in different times of his life. And he mentioned you. You must feel so much pride for him, for this president to be singling you out on so many occasions. Your work has had a big effect on his thinking, on his life, on his values in some ways. That's a big thing, isn't it?
Well, you know, I think that we share values and that he sees values that are also his reflected in the things that I write. You know, I mean, I think it's that kind of affinity. There's a certain level at which I have never quite believed that those things happen. It is so startling to find out that you are actually on the president's mind. And this... And this does not become less startling over time, believe me.
I would imagine. But that's a very good thing. And after reading the New York Review of Books interview that you had with him, I started reading you as well and gave your books to other people, and everybody's reading you, those who, of course, haven't already read you. So as he said, it'll be a good thing if people start picking up your books, and I would imagine that they've done just that. I love this image of him, and it sort of puts him in this long arc of history. Just these little things of his going from the Oval Office up to the Lincoln bedroom where Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, there's a handwritten copy of that, and the president going up there to read that every now and then. That just strikes me so deeply.
Oh, yes. You know, I went to one of those small dinners that they have had over the years, and he took us into the Lincoln bedroom and he showed us that fair copy of the Gettysburg Address, and we read it. You know, it was really beautiful. You know, in that setting, it's just such an amazing thing.
I know he asked you in the lengthy interview that the two of you had in September about fear. And let me ask you the question that he asked you as well. He asked about the role that fear may be playing in our politics, in our democracy, and in our culture. I don't think it's an understatement to say there's a lot of fear in the country right now about what the future will be. This is a very unusual transition of power. How would you respond to that now, the question he asked you about our fear?
Well, I think that those of us who fear this drastic change probably have to take a few days and let the fear take more concrete form so we can anticipate responses to what we worry about, because you always mitigate worry if you have some way to respond to it, right? In terms of the general atmosphere of the culture, I think that the fear has been on the other side of the domestic polarization. That the, I mean, it really is quite ironic, but all these conspiracy theories and terrible stories that built up around Obama as president on the basis of completely nonsensical things, you know. I mean, it's like waking up out of a fever dream or something to remember how much press attention was given to, you know, the birth certificate,
yes,
and the, you know, the having this child going to a foreign school and all these kinds of things, as if we were so naive, so ridiculous as people that we actually could be persuaded to pay attention to those things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And now you have this man who really is a complete rupture of virtually all decorum and all tradition. And, there is not that same, I mean, I think that the people who worry about Trump are not so much the ones that are inclined to make demonologies about the fact of somebody having, you know, his picture apparently in the newspaper with the assassin of, you know what I mean? That's crazy stuff that was going on during
right.
the Republican primaries. I don't, you know, but there was a way in which the anxiety about Obama, who has to be the most benevolent person that ever walked the earth, second most benevolent, and the, you know, that had something to do with the incredible surge of the gun industry, and it had something to do with certain kinds of religious, you know, exaggerated religious enthusiasm. It was all, it is, no doubt still, but was certainly through Obama's tenure, a very, very strange dynamic, not information-based. I mean, so intense in itself as to be truly hostile to information, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was a strange thing. I hope I'm correct in putting it in the past tense. I'm not.
Mm-hmm. When you
Something with that intensity.
When the two of you talked about, and he seemed to do it in kind of a matter-of-fact way, when you talked about the response of the world, the what's happening with right-wing political parties in Europe, what's happened in the United States with more very, very conservative and very unusual, some might say very un-American kinds of values surfacing. How did he explain that, and did you agree with his explanation of what's surfacing right now?
You know, I mean, I haven't read that in quite a long time, but we've corresponded with each other over the years, and he always feels that I am overreacting. I'm always defending him, and I mean defending him in the sense that I feel that he has been very unfairly treated, and so but at the same time that I'm defending him, I'm thinking he would be there saying, oh, you know, don't say that. That's not really true. You know, don't carry it that far. He has a very, very, I've never known anyone like him because by my lights, he's been very severely provoked in many ways, you know, insults and all this. He just absorbs it and it doesn't become any ongoing antagonism. He doesn't seem to feel, less respect for people on the basis of it. And so, you know, here I don't think this is entirely unusual, but he's very calm about things that just irritate me to death,
Maybe it's because he's read a lot of your novels, and he said, you know, reading novels, you learn empathy, you know, being comfortable that the world's complicated and walking around in other people's shoes. So you've got that, too.
Yes. Well, I just hope that I've learned some of it from him.
Mm. We're going to welcome a couple phone calls if you'd like to call in. We're delighted to have Marilyn Robinson with us, Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist, essayist, author, professor of English she has been, and creative writing at the University of Iowa, Iowa Writers Workshop, author of many superb books, including Gilead, Home, Lila. She has a new essay collection, The Givenness of Things. She's won the National Humanities Medal, has received the Library of Congress Prize for American Fiction, and has received many awards. What caught our attention on this day as the president leaves office is her friendship with the president and the president seeking her out for a lengthy conversation. As you've heard her say, they've corresponded quite a bit because she's first in line for a conversation that he respects and loves her writing and finds her a person who has been worth getting to know. So she is with us. Well, welcome a couple phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. I want to talk about some of the speeches that he gave, and I mistakenly played part of the Sandy Hook speech, which makes you cry. It did when that whole event took place, and how it still is something that has made the president cry every time he talks about it. But the speech that he gave in Charleston, where he mentions Marilyn Robinson, actually, we'll hear that momentarily and get her response to that. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, and this is the Ideas Network. And this now is President Obama we're playing a portion of the eulogy for State Senator Clementa Pinckney, who was one of the 9 victims in the shooting at Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston, South Carolina, in 2015.
That's what I felt this week, an open heart. That, more than any particular policy or analysis, that's right, is what's called upon right now, I think.
Yeah.
What a friend of mine, the writer Marilyn Robinson, calls that reservoir of goodness beyond and of another kind, that we are able to do each other in the ordinary cause of things. Mm-hmm. That reservoir of goodness. Mm-hmm. If we can find that grace, uh-huh, anything is possible.
Yeah. I'm not.
If we can tap that grace, everything can change. Amazing grace. Amazing grace. Amazing grace. How
sweet the sound that saved.
And Marilyn Robinson is with us. He quoted your words, that reservoir of goodness, that reservoir of goodness. He believes in it. You must as well. Isn't that remarkable that he remembered those words? Words can be so darn important, can't they?
Yes. Yes. And you know, he's an exceptionally word-oriented man. You know, I mean, that sounds foolish, but, you know, I mean, he reads so much.
Yes.
What he reads has such a huge impact on his thinking. You know, he's very articulate, of course, and that one of the things that reflects is the great attention that he brings to bear on words. And a president can sing. How long will it be before we see that again?
Mm. Yeah. Let's go to some phone calls. Chris in Madison. Hi.
Hi, thank you very much for this amazing show. And I just had to call in and share. I was driving home, and as I was listening prior to the president's speech at Sandy Hook, which also had me very moved, I looked up and there was a bald eagle flying right across my view. And that just really, it gave me the shivers, because it reminded me that there are greater forces than just those that I see at work. I took my kids from Scotland to President Obama's first inauguration, and I will be there on Thursday to give a bow of gratitude as he leaves, because I have personally been inspired. And to see a bald eagle and to see President Obama and this first family embody all the best of what it means to be American, I am just so down on my knees grateful, and will keep that going in my life and spreading wherever possible. So thank you both, that reservoir of goodness. Absolutely.
Thank you, Chris. Marilyn.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, it is wonderful. I love the way he ended his press conference, and I'm so glad that the reporter who's been following him since Springfield got a chance, and that he recognized, he gave her the chance, what he said about his children. It is just, what a dad he is. You know, what a husband he is. There is something to that symbolism nationally that is so important for us.
There's no question about that. When I talk to audiences and so on, I've talked to students, the number of young men that have said to me that he is a model of a good man, which mm-hmm. is something that they felt they had not seen enough of, you know. I mean, the people are always talking about his legacy and so on, but a huge part of his legacy is that he has been immaculately ethical man with a fantastic sense of humor and graciousness, you know. I mean, it might just be stereotyping, but very often when people are so careful of their ethical life and so on as he has been, you think of them as being a little stiff or a little self-congratulatory or something. He's not that at all. Not at all, you know. And yet his ethical sense seems to be absolutely reliable, absolutely solid. It's really beautiful.
It is. We have time. We only have about a minute left. Sally in Milwaukee. Hi, Sally.
Hi. Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to know, as wonderful as Obama was, and all of us who love him, and what can we use from his years, and what can we use, or what was the best thing he did, something that we can carry every day to think about the future, that it will be good, what he's given us.
All right, Sally, thank you. We have about 40 seconds left, Marilyn.
Right. Well, you know, I think that the presumptive respect, he really, his first impulse toward anyone under any circumstance is to show respect. And I think that, you know, if we wanted to have a quiet revolution in this country, we could adopt that, you know, as a mode of life, and things would be enhanced immediately. And we could all say thank you, Obama.
Marilyn, thank you so much for being with us. And we could read your books. He would like for us to do that. You inspired him.
It.
Thank you. Marilyn Robinson and the books, Gilead. I haven't read the other ones yet. They're on the shelf. Home and Lila, Pulitzer Prize winning novelist, essayist, and author, and someone who President Barack Obama admires immensely. And so we're delighted to have had her with us on this second to the last day of his administration. Thanks to Scotty Myers and to Colleen Duvall for this show.